position number 22498, reel 1.
Colonel Hall, reel 1. Where were you born, please?
I was born in Weston-super-Mare. At that time it was in Somerset. And I was born on the 20th of August in 1919.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Weston-super-Mare?
I had my prep schooling in Weston-super-Mare, yes. And then I went to Clifton College, which is in Bristol.
How old were you when you finished there?
Well, I think about 18 and a half. Perhaps a little earlier, perhaps 18.
So the war had not started?
No, it was about to start.
So what did you do on leaving school?
My parents articled me to an architect in Bristol, and I joined the Territorial Army as a sapper.
Why did you want to do that?
Well, had I not done so, I would have been conscripted as a militia boy. I think that's the correct term.
What was the unit of the TA that you joined?
It was a field company of the Royal Engineers.
Can you remember which one?
205.
What kind of training did you get with them?
Very little training as a Royal Engineer. It was only sort of drill and a fortnight's camp at Exmouth. And that was about it.
No engineering skills?
No, the reason I joined the engineers was because I was an architectural student.
So did you join the TA in 39 or?
Yes.
Had you expected a war to break out?
Undoubtedly.
So how did you react when you heard Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
I was rather excited.
No sense of dismay?
A little apprehensive, yes.
Did the war affect you at first?
In what way, sorry?
In any way whatsoever.
Well, of course, it disrupted my previous life, and my planned life, but I had experienced the OTC at school, and so it wasn't entirely fresh to me.
Were you in any bombing by the German Air Force?
Yes, I suppose so. During the war.
In the early part of the war?
Oh, no, sorry. In fact, I was embodied on the day war broke out into the regular army, and in fact, I didn't do any physical fighting until the campaign in Northwest Europe, although we did a heck of a lot of training.
What's happened to you once you were embodied?
Well, I was very quickly sent off to an Octu, which was 168 Octu in Aldershot.
What happened there?
Well, that was trained to be an officer. Well, I went as an officer cadet training to be a second lieutenant.
Can you describe it, please?
Oh, it was fun. I enjoyed it. One learned tactics, and I found that I had a bit of a flair for tactical operations. I was always quite interested in the drill side of things, because I'm a bit of a show-off, I suppose.
Any incidents that happened to you whilst you were at Aldershot?
Only personal ones, like girlfriends.
Anything in connection with the training that you were doing?
Nothing of great interest, I think. It's difficult to describe, and of course it's a long time ago.
And after Octio?
I was commissioned into the 11th Battalion, the Worcestershire Regiment, on Hereford Racecourse.
Had you selected the Worcesters?
Not initially, no. I'd selected the Gloucesters as my first choice.
Why was that?
Well, I was at school in Gloucestershire. And my second choice was the Worcestershire Regiment, because I had cousins who farmed in Worcestershire. And my third choice was the Somerset Light Infantry, because I lived in Weston-super-Mare, but I didn't really want to be a light infantryman, because I didn't want to march about as if I was trying to keep a billiard ball between the cheeks of my arse. That's probably not worth recording.
I think it is, yes. What happened once you were commissioned into the 11th Worcesters?
Well, we spent about 2 months on Hereford Racecourse. The 11th Battalion was a conscript battalion, which was raised after the war had started, and most of the soldiers were rather older than the young officers. In fact, the average age of the soldiers who were conscripted was about 30. And we started off getting equipment and getting kitted out, really virtually from scratch. And we did a bit of training, not very much tactical training, PT and fitting people up and that sort of thing, and even simple things like teaching them how to salute. And
did most of the men come from Worcestershire?
Yes, they did. Worcestershire or Herefordshire, a few from Gloucestershire, one or two from, well, that's about it, I suppose.
How did you find the men?
They were tremendously good. They, I think they were tolerant of me because I was so much younger than they were. I was known as a young nobby.
What was this equipment that you were getting?
Well, initially, battle dresses, respirators, eventually rifles, a little bit later, Bren-like machine guns, and gradually we got the motor equipment coming in all the time. It was a slow and gradual process, but it was quite an interesting period, actually.
Was everybody satisfied with the equipment?
I don't know. I feel everybody grumbles a bit from time to time. I think, by and large, we were all rather thrilled that we were beginning to look like proper soldiers.
What are your next memories?
Well, after about 2 months, we left Hereford Racecourse and we went to Norfolk, to near Great Yarmouth. And I had, with my 32 soldiers, to guard 3 miles of coastal defence on a place called Caister Race Golf Course, which at that time I was quite enthusiastic about, but on reflection it would have been impossible to have done anything very effective had the Germans invaded.
Had Dunkirk already happened?
It happened while I was at Octu.
What effect did that have on everybody?
I think, as far as I can remember, it just hardened determination to do one's best. I don't think anybody really got... It didn't affect morale adversely, actually.
So you didn't think the Germans would win the war then?
I was bloody certain that they weren't going to.
And did you think an invasion would occur on the Norfolk coast when you were there?
I'd hoped not, but I didn't know, quite honestly.
What kind of defences were there in the Caister area?
In all, there was the 11th Battalion. As far as I can recall, we weren't supported by any artillery. By this time, we were brought up to scratch, to war office, to war standard equipment and so on, both in our own vehicles and in weaponry and generally in equipment.
How did you get on with the local people there?
Very well. It wasn't a very populated part of the coast, actually, but those people who we met were very, very cooperative, very friendly, took soldiers into their homes and were very hospitable.
What job did you have with the battalion at this time?
I was an infantry platoon commander, a rifle platoon commander.
Do you remember which one?
Yeah, I was commanding 15 platoon in C Company.
What did it involve?
It involved the training of the soldiers under the direction of my company commander. It involved disciplining of the soldiers when it was necessary, and general welfare of the soldiers. It was quite a job for a 20-year-old, particularly as most of the soldiers were 10 years older than me.
Were there any disciplinary problems?
No, minor problems. It was an occasional punch-up and the sort of problems that checked them cleaned their weapons properly and that sort of minor things.
What do you remember happening next?
After leaving Norfolk, I mean, we were posted to the Northamptonshire area as part of a newly formed armoured division, the 9th Armoured Division. And we became the Lorrid Infantry Battalion in what was then known as a support group. The support group was commanded by a brigadier and consisted of a field regiment of artillery, a regiment of anti-tank weapons. I'm not quite certain about that. And one infantry battalion, the 11th Battalion, the Worcestershire Regiment.
Whereabouts in Northamptonshire was this?
We were dotted around between the general area of Leicester, Naseby, where the Battle of Naseby took place, villages with names like Husband, Bosworth. The battalion was covered an area of about 5-10 square miles, I would say, with companies dotted around in various houses, which had once been sort of fairly large country homes, which had been requisitioned by the army, and Nissen huts and stuff put up in the grounds.
Was it a comfortable existence?
Yes, very. But by this time, we were developing much more into the tactical situations. We had to do a lot of tactical exercises and so on, involving long marches by night, transport marches, with no headlights, only the axle lights on the vehicles showing, and many of these exercises were directed at the possibility of the enemy dropping parachutes in various areas.
What is a transport march?
Yes.
What is a transport march?
A transport march is you are moving in vehicles, and you have to keep a certain distance apart because the vehicles could be subjected to air attack. You also must remember that there were no signposts at that time, and so map reading was of the greatest importance. That you the column all kept on the same on the appropriate road. And the junior officers, like me, were really sheepdogs. We were put onto motorbikes, and we had to sort of dash in and out of the column and make sure that vehicles didn't go astray. I mean, to show you something.
So these transport marches didn't actually involve foot slogging?
No. Although we did. In our normal training, we did quite a lot of foot slogging. We marched up to 20 miles a day with full kit.
How did the men take to this kind of work?
Well.
So, was it in your mind that you were being used for home defence or to go abroad at this time?
Well, we all really wanted to go overseas. We hoped that we would do. But then, unfortunately, the command of the division changed, and we got General Sir Brian Horrocks as our divisional commander. And he didn't see the necessity for the support group. He wanted an additional armoured brigade. And the support group as such became redundant. Then we were transferred to an independent guards brigade, which was under the command of the general officer commanding London District.
What was this guards brigade?
I think it was called 214 Guards Independent Brigade, but I'm not certain that my memory is correct on that.
How did this change of unit affect the battalion?
We became rather sort of guards-like. It was rather amusing in a way. It was enjoyable.
Guards-like in what way?
Bullshit.
You mean they enjoyed that?
Yeah. It's rather nice to swagger about, you know.
Did you come into close contact with guards' units?
Yes.
Which ones?
3rd Irish, and a Grenadier battalion, but I can't remember which one, what its number was. I also went down to Guards Depot at Caterham, where I saw on a notice board a notice which said, "The following guardsmen will report for nappy fatigue to Sergeant somebody, guardsman O'Toole, guardsman O'Flaherty, guardsman the Earl of Cork and Kerry, and guardsman His Highness the Prince of Luxembourg."
Was there any conflict between your troops and the guards?
No. Only over a... only on one occasion, over a cross-country run, when the chap who eventually came in first of the cross-country run was one of our young officers called Wally Leadbeater, and he got punched up by a couple of guardsmen who he had overtaken.
Because he'd overtaken them?
Yeah.
Any other memories from this period with the Guards Independent Brigade?
Yes, but most of them pleasant, actually. One example, I was given the duty at one time of being the camp commandant of Knightsbridge Barracks. And on one occasion, I was sitting in the car with the general officer commanding London district, who had a bee in his bonnet about people not saluting his pennant. And it was a bit difficult because there were Frenchmen, free Frenchmen, Americans by this time. This was early in 1943. Americans, even a few Chinese, all sorts of people. And on one occasion, I was sitting in the front of the general's car, and next to the driver, and he stopped the car because he saw a chap with specs, a rather dirty Macintosh, and what appeared to be a captain's badges, sloping down the road with his hands in his pockets. And he didn't salute the general's car. And the general said to me, "Get out and take that officer's name and his unit." So I got out and I went to him and I said, "I'm terribly sorry, the general's told me to take your name for not saluting his car, his pennant." And the chap said, "Oh, of course, my dear fellow," gave me his name, and I went back, and with great pleasure I reported to the general, "Sir, he is Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands."
How did he react to that?
Not very well. Drive on.
Any other pleasant memories from this time?
Yes, but some of them I'm not prepared to discuss in public.
Were you in any bombing at this time?
Yeah, there was a certain amount of, well, it wasn't really a sort of heavy blitz, but there was, you know, the air raid walling with signal walls was a fairly common occasion, practically every night. And occasionally the odd bomb was dropped, but we weren't very, we didn't have any casualties, and we weren't very, very seriously sort of upset by this.
What was the next step?
After that, there was one occasion, I must tell you, which took place. We had a very splendid commanding officer who'd been posted to us during the period that we were with the guards, and he had great influence with the War Office, as it then was. He'd served there in a fairly senior capacity, and he arranged that the 11th Battalion, the Worcestershire Regiment, which by this time was a rather smart outfit, should become the 1st Battalion, the Worcestershire Regiment, because the 1st Battalion had been decimated in the early battles in Eritrea, and they only had a very small cadre left. And there was a tremendous parade which was put on at Harrow. And the cadre of the original 1st Battalion, only about two dozen blokes, marched into the middle of the 11th Battalion, and the 11th Battalion then became the 1st Battalion. And very soon after that, we left the Guards and London District and went to the 43rd Division, which was in training down in Sussex, Kent, and this part of the world, for the invasion of Normandy.
Where exactly did you go?
Initially, we went to a place called Up Park Camp at Hythe. And then, I think we stayed there virtually until we went into sealed camps at a place called Heathfield, which is quite near here, actually, only about 20 miles from here.
What were you doing at Hythe?
Virtually training for D-Day, and we did a lot of river crossing exercises. We did a lot of fitness training. The transport was all sort of waterproof, you know, so that sort of thing. It was a very hectic time, but it's hard to describe what happened in detail.
Did you do amphibious training?
Yeah.
Whereabouts?
I can't remember the name of the place.
In Kent?
In Kent somewhere, yes. We didn't do a great deal, but and basically it was getting vehicles into water and getting them ashore rather than actually the infantry doing its stuff. And in fact, although we didn't know that at the time, the 43rd Division was not designated to be one of the assault divisions. We were a follow-up division. When the initial bridge had been secured, we were to go through and expand it towards Caen. That was the long-term objective. Although, of course, we didn't know that at the time.
Did you still have your same job in the battalion?
Yeah. I was also the battalion weapon training officer at that time, which meant that I was responsible for the skill at arms of soldiers in with their weapons, either their machine gun, light machine guns, the Bren guns, or their rifles, or at that time we had the Piat anti-tank weapons like that. And that was an additional responsibility that I was given.
What did you think of the Piat?
I thought it was quite a useful weapon. And in fact, not only was it useful against tanks, it was very useful against people's front doors or windows if one was involved in street fighting.
What kind of standard were the men achieving in arms?
Very high standard. I was extremely pleased, and so was my colonel, who was a very exacting man. We'd become a really, a spot-on unit by this time.
Now, I think you were telling me about going into a closed camp for Normandy.
Yeah, at Heathfield.
Can you tell me what happened there, please?
Well, that was a bit frustrating because we were not supposed to sort of go out, and we were incarcerated, if you like. In addition to that, we had the unpleasant job of having to vet all the soldiers' letters, censor them, in fact. And ours got censored in turn, and I remember my mother showing me a letter just after the war was over, which I had written to her at that time, and it started, "My dearest mother," and then lots and lots of blacked out paragraphs, and at the end, "Fondest love to you and father, Peter," and that's all she got. And in fact, all I had done was say that I'd met a lot of chaps from Weston-super-Mare, because we were brigaded with the 7th Somerset Light Infantry. So quite a lot of these guys had been at school with me.
So you were giving away the order of battle?
I suppose so, yes.
Any other memories about being in this Heathfield camp?
Only that it was a very frustrating time, and people started to fall out with each other, get on each other's nerves. A bit difficult.
And then?
Then eventually we were off to war.
Where did you move to, first of all?
I can't remember where we embarked from. I can't
remember. Doesn't matter. That'll be on record anyway. Mm. How did the embarkation procedure go?
Oh, very smoothly. We actually embarked. First of all, when I say very smoothly, that's not quite true. Because first of all, we were put on board assault landing craft. And for some reason, which I never discovered, we were taken off those landing craft. And put on a vehicle, a passenger ship, which I think was called the Canterbury, if I remember. And that was the infantry element. The transport went, was embarked somewhere else, and I don't know how they sort of eventually landed. We didn't all meet up together again until we got to Normandy. And the infantry element landed on the Mulberry, which had been floated over at that time. The Mulberry, as you know, was an artificial harbour.
What was your crossing like?
It was fairly smooth, actually.